Hi, this is Don Fleckinger of SearchContentManagement.com, and you are listening to the Pipeline Podcast. I'm here today with Adrian Swinsko, author of the new book, Punk CX. Thanks for joining us today, Adrian.
Hey, Don. Great to be here. Thanks for having me on your show.
Well, introduce yourself to the listeners of the Pipeline Podcast, sort of what you do now and where you are located and why you like what you do.
I'll just kind of tell you where I'm at. So I'm currently I'm based in Brighton on the south coast of England, which is like an hour south of London on the coast. I'm currently feeling slightly hot and sweaty because we're in the middle of a bit of a heat wave right now, which is kind of, as a pale Scotsman, means I don't necessarily deal with the heat very well, and I end up sort of doing a good impression of an ice cube. But that's kind of by the by. What do I do? I am an advisor, so workshop leader, speaker, writer, researcher on all things customer service, customer experience. I'm really, really interested in the idea that we can build better organizations that produce better outcomes for both the customers and their employees, and how that can facilitate kind of growth and differentiation and sustainability. So I'm really passionate about it because I come at it from a perspective of, I personally really don't like bad service, having kind of built businesses in the past or business propositions in the past that have had kind of experience at their heart. It sort of continually frustrates me how organizations almost get in their own way of delivering a great experience for the customers, and also kind of, don't necessarily help their employees deliver a great service or great experience to the customers. So that's what I'm really interested in. That's the area that I work in. And Punk CX is my third book, which is sort of the latest sort of manifestation of a lot of the writing and research I've been doing kind of late.
Well, let's get into the punk part. Obviously, you were a fan of the music. Sort of tell us about what you were doing back in the day and why that inspired you to do a punk-themed book now.
So I am I'm slightly too young, I have to say, to be an original punk. So I was more baptized into the post-punk movement. So the formative music that I grew up with was more sort of the two-tone new wave ska type stuff, stuff of the, in the UK, it would be the Madness and the Specials and Selector and that sort of stuff. But then came to the post-punk stuff in the early 80s. So I've been into punk music for a long time. And the idea for the book came about, actually, it started, as many kind of ideas seem to do, over a pint with a friend of mine in a pub about 18 months ago, where I was having a bit of a rant about the state of service and experience and how I was frustrated by some of the lack of progress that I was seeing around me. And it was very much almost people taking a paint by numbers approach. And I sort of opined, wouldn't it be great if some people just took a more of a punk approach to things? And that sort of idea sat with me for a while, probably for about 6-7 months. And then in the summer of last year, I started to really think about that idea, and it occurred to me that punk came about as an evolution in musical genres, particularly, in the 1970s, and it exploded out of the back of prog rock in the 1970s, which, whilst it was popular I liked some of it, it also got accused of being, overly elaborate, overly technical, sometimes self-indulgent, and in many ways, in danger of disappearing up its own arse, if you pardon the expression. And so punk exploded at the back of prog rock with its, DIY, back to basics, democratic, all heart and emotion sort of approach to music. Now, it struck me that when I thought a bit more about prog rock, it struck me that some of those characteristics, i.e. overly complicated, self-indulgence, becoming overly technical, et cetera, were actually some of the same characteristics that I thought were bedeviling the service and experience industry right now, i.e. it's becoming, overly complicated, with technology choice, you know, certified, codified, metricized, functionalized, and so on and so forth. And it, that struck me that was a parallel there between this evolution of musical genres and all, what was going on in the service and experience space. And that made me think, oh, so I wonder what a punk version of CX would look like. And that was the germ of the idea, or the hypothesis of the idea behind the book. And so I set about writing a book that took more of a punk approach to customer experience. And so it's not a long book. It's not a standard business book. It doesn't have sort of 50,000 words of black ink on white paper. But it has a series of ideas that are organized like almost like music tracks in an album, which are short, to the point, quite pithy, sometimes profane, sometimes a little bit shouty, sometimes challenging, and that's all by design. But it's also heavy on design as well. So the book actually looks a little bit like a cross between a fanzine and or a graphic novel. So it's actually quite an engaging kind of read because it's visually stimulating as well.
Well, I was fascinated by the setup when you talk about how prog rock had sort of stagnated. I'm a old rock journalist, still write from time to time, but I cover CX, so these themes resonated with me. You know, you think about, you know, whether it's Pink Floyd or maybe some of the more proggy prog rock stuff where they were just at some points just sort of playing to listen to themselves play, and there was no customer, as it were, involved. It was just noodling for noodling's sake. And then punk came along. You had the Clash, the Buzzcocks, and then, of course, the later ska bands, as you were talking about, really disrupting the music scene and sort of bringing that three-minute pop song back. And I look forward now to covering customer experience. It is kind of crazy. There is, in that, there's every business needs to customize, needs to get their message out quick. They need to tailor their service to their particular customers, yet the technology choices sort of push them toward automating it the same way everybody else does. And one of the things you talked about in your introduction, I believe, is figuring out how to determine whether you want, you know, high tech and low touch, or vice versa, you know, how to find that balance for your business instead of just taking, you know, sort of solutions off the shelf to create your customer experience. How does having the punk ethos sort of, you know, putting that set of glasses on and looking through those lenses sort of help inform better decisions, in your opinion?
So I think it's a go back to your kind of point around kind of the high touch, low touch, that sort of type of dimension. Is the thing that struck me as well is that we have so many companies that are trying to do so many different things, but actually it seems to be it's not informed or guided by an overall strategy. Now, I think the businesses in general that have a business or commercial or market strategy. But if I ask many you know, leaders or execs or CX professionals about what their business strategy is, that they'll be able to tell me quite easily, roll off the tongue. And then if I say, okay, fine. So how does what is your experience strategy, and how does that align with your business strategy? How does that enable that? I.e., is it high touch or low touch? Is it high tech, low tech? And how does that change for different customer groups and across different parts of the journey? Most of them, when posed with those sort of questions, kind of draw a blank. And I think that explains their approach to customer experience, where people get caught up in the latest thing, whether it's a chatbot or it's an AI this or a kind of predictive analytics that. And you end up with all these, you know, unconnected, inconsistent, almost Frankenstein-esque experiences that don't quite work. They don't quite make sense. And I think actually stepping back and stripping back and understanding what is the end that we want to kind of create is the first step to getting these things right.
If Johnny Rotten walked into a customer experience meeting as a company is reevaluating and remaking its customer experience and looking at all the complicated technology, the marketing, automation, and e-commerce, and trying to tie it all together. What would he destroy first in most companies?
Right, he probably just would kind of turn around and just go, "That's tosh." Turn around and just walk out, because he would almost, I think he would treat it with the contempt in many ways that it deserves. He'd be like going, "You guys have no idea what you're talking about." It's like almost like the question would be, where's the heart? Where's the emotion? Where's the movement? Where's the customer in all of this? Because we're spending so much time almost like talking about metrics and this and that and so many different other things. It's a bit like, well, it feels like our audience, the customer, is getting lost in all of that. People get so caught up in the complication, the complexity of it all, that actually we're just losing sight of, hopefully, the people that are the main beneficiaries are the customers, and from that then the business benefits. And so I think he would turn in and sort of look slightly kind of bog-eyed and then go slightly cockeyed and go, "This sounds like a whole bunch of tosh, I'm off." Kind of like, I'll leave you to it. Because you'd be a bit like going, you're sounding a lot like somebody like Brian Eno with his cape and his seven synthesizers that he's playing at the same time. And it's a bit like, oh, crumbs. I thought we killed off prog rock, but obviously it's come back again.
What advice would you give, and thinking about our readers, which are, chief customer officers, chief experience officers, maybe some of the IT folks that support them in buying all these tools and analytics packages and cloud marketing suites and things like that. If somebody's listening to this podcast and they're thinking, I want to take a little bit of this theory and practice back home and put it into practice and shake things up a little bit, what advice would you give them to sort of put the punk approach, the tear it down, think new, get to the point philosophy in their own customer experience when they're building or refreshing their own customer experience programs?
So I would say that one of the first things to do is the change has to start with them, I think. It has to start with their own kind of mindset and their own understanding. And I would challenge most leaders with the question that, when was the last time that you went and hung out with your customers, or you observed them, or you talked to them, not in a structured way, but in a way that you could actually see them for who they are, to actually really understand that the problems that they're trying to solve or the things that they go through. Because only then do we get this really visceral kind of insight into what it is that we're trying to achieve, if you know what I mean. And not to rely on, oh, the data says this, the metric says that. I mean, there's a beautiful saying that comes from a Polish-American language scholar. I think his name was Joseph Krasinski. I think I get that right. And I apologize if I get the pronunciation wrong. But he had this quote that says, "The map is not the territory." And I think that beautifully encapsulates the difference, is that we're operating off maps, but we know that actually, the territory is where the real stuff happens, if you know what I mean. And we have to go and investigate the territory and understand the nuances of it. And only then can we really, really understand and deeply understand, what is going to be appropriate for both our customers and then also for our business, because otherwise we're just too distant from it.
Last question. You seem in the book and in this conversation a little bit disdainful of all the metrics and KPIs that customer experience uses to measure quality or whatnot, but you're not completely dismissive of them. So how do you figure out, how many metrics are enough, and when to trust your own human wits as opposed to the spreadsheets or the analytics?
So let me answer the kind of question this way, Don, and make it absolutely clear for your readers. I am a fan of really great technology, and I'm a fan of metrics used in the right way. When it comes to metrics, I think we have to get the balance right. We have to make sure that are we using metrics as targets, or are we using them as measures, a la kind of metrics? Because if you use them as targets, then there's sometimes a dangerous loop that we get into, that we end up chasing the targets rather than actually using the metrics just to measure our progress and help us understand how we're getting on. But I also think that if we come from a strategy perspective, then it can help us decide what is the right type of technology that we need to use or implement to achieve the outcomes that we want. Now, the problem with all of that sort of stuff is, how do you get the balance right? And there is no quick and or right answer to that, and it has to become a process of experimentation. I think there was a really useful piece of research that was done that illustrates some of the problems with some of these, particularly metrics. And it showed that the impact of measuring things on like human behavior, particularly if you use metrics from an internal perspective. And I think it was some professors out of Darden in the US who was doing an experiment with people that were using things like Fitbits or, medical devices. They were looking at the effect of the quantified self, as it were. And what they found when they kind of went through this process, because they were looking at did this help people improve outcomes? What they found is that when the things that they measured with the group that they were measuring, they found that the quantity of the activity went up, that their level of engagement with that activity and the quality of it went down. And what that made me think when I discovered that piece of research was that it is like, sometimes we have to be aware of the unintended consequences of over-measuring things, if that makes sense.
Well, this has been great and informative, and your expertise has made me feel oh so pretty vacant. dumb punk joke for those who were around back in the day. But anyway, thank you so much for your time, Adrian. This has been great.
Don, it's been my absolute pleasure. I have a big kind of salute to all the punk fans out there, and also to the new converts. Kind of welcome to the party.